also used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
I mean, the less you eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February the 5th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole. I am joined here today by our co-host, Farah Nazarali.
Hello.
And Darren Chang.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. The theme of today's show is taking action for animals in Canada. For our first interview, we'll be interviewing two people, local activists Tommy Knowles and Emily Pickett, who are the co-founders of the local nonprofit, the Wildlife Defense League, which works in defending wildlife in British Columbia against exploitation. The BC government is back in its second year now of killing wolves under the premise of caribou management. And Tommy and Emily will be giving us an update on the call from where they are currently on site in the South Selkirk region of BC to monitor and expose the kill to the public. Plus, Emily was instrumental in a protest against trophy hunting a couple weekends ago in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and she'll be telling about that as well. Then for our feature interview, we'll have Adam Wilson on the show, who is the director of investigations of the American nonprofit called Last Chance for Animals. They have just released the results of an undercover investigation conducted last year at Marineland Canada with regards to the beluga whales being kept there and tying in with the current proposed Bill S-203 to end the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada. Adam will be telling us about the investigation as well as some info about the bill. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, Darren, you were busy last weekend at another protest at the Greater Vancouver Zoo, and I understand this is part of a series of protests and a pressure campaign against the zoo. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah. I think first I just want to say I'm actually really excited to hear, to listen to the interview about the Marineland investigation, because it's all kind of connected. That's part of what this campaign is about. I mean, it's not just a campaign against one single zoo and in outside of Vancouver. Liberate GV Zoo Animals campaign that is targeting the Greater Vancouver Zoo is really it's really part of a much broader anti-captivity movement that is happening both nationally and internationally. And that's, you know, that's what it's about. And we started this campaign last April, and we got a group of activists together. I think around 60 people showed up, and we just marched to the zoo, to the entrance of the zoo. And our message is really clear that, you know, keeping wild animals in captivity is really cruel, because there is just absolutely no way that in captive confined environments that these animals can basically do what they're naturally motivated to do. And it would just, you know, it's terrible welfare, and a lot of these animals are suffering, they're depressed, and they have to be moved to the ones that can be moved right now needs to be moved to sanctuaries that are much better suited, both in terms of the environment and the climate, to their species. And so this protest from the past week was really just, yeah, it's just one more protest that's, you know, adding on pressure to this campaign. We kind of took a bit of a break over the winter, because the winter is kind of a slow season for the zoo anyway, so there wasn't too much happening.
How is the protest being received by the public? Because it seems to me obvious when I go to the zoo that the animals are suffering.
Yeah, I think the public is actually fairly receptive. I mean, a lot of people who drive by, the Greater Vancouver Zoo is located right along one of the main highways in Langley. And a lot of times cars drive by and they see us holding signs, they honk at us, and people are supportive. We've even had, a few instances of families who actually turned around. Like, we were chanting, don't buy a ticket. And
that's always very motivating, when I go to a protest like that and I see that, wow, they are like, I made a difference. And yes. I'm so glad I showed up, even if it's just to change the mind of this one family. It's so worth my time.
So this past Sunday when we showed up, the zoo employees were expecting us and they had their exit gates completely closed. And we usually protest at closer to the exit gate because the exit gate is actually much closer to the actual ticket booth where people go into the zoo. So cops were there. They hired private security. And I think I want to tell this story because one thing that really caught my attention were these, they had two mountain goats really close to the entrance. And when we were making a lot of noise and chanting at the entrance of the zoo, those two mountain goats kind of slowly walked closer to the fence and were just kind of staring at us. And that was really, I mean, it just kind of made a really strong impression on me because they just had this kind of bored kind of look.
Maybe it was kind of exciting for them to see what was going on.
And I mean, later on that day when I went home, you know, I was Googling more about mountain goats because, you know, it was such like a weird, memorable experience for me. And just realizing that, you know, these are animals that live in high altitudes and, you know, they hop around, you know,
normally live very exciting lives because I've seen really treacherous photos of them hanging on the sides of vertical mountain surfaces. And what was their living environment like in the zoo that you could see? Like
behind some kind of cage or something? Nothing even close, right? They had these really, you know, low level artificial looking, you know, rocks, like, you know, that is sort of trying to mimic the side of a mountain that allows these goats to climb on. And it's just really, it's really sad. That's what it is.
I wouldn't be surprised if the goats were curious just because they could sense that there's, you know, there's a group of people that are concerned about their welfare, because I think that, you know, all beings have a sensitivity to that. They can really tell when we have the intent to harm or we have the intent to revere and preserve life.
Yeah, for sure. And I would surely hope that's, you know, how they felt about our presence there. And you know, just doing more research about mountain goats too and realizing that this is not even a species that's even remotely, you know, threatened or endangered. You know, they're listed as one of the least concerned species as far as population health-wise. And they're local too, relatively local. I mean, they live along a mountain range that, you know, crosses right through BC on here on the West Coast. So there's like for the zoo to have any sort of justification for keeping these animals in captivity is just pure nonsense.
Well, thanks for that update on the latest protest at the Greater Vancouver Zoo, Darren.
Thanks.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food, food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda. Thank God for the independent like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens citizen to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
So upcoming this next two weekends, we have some really exciting events in Vancouver. Our first event is tomorrow, this Saturday, at 8 p.m. There's going to be a Vancouver vegan drinks event at the Black Lodge. So far on Facebook, it shows that a lot of people are going, so there might be a chance that the location might get switched because the Black Lodge is kind of a small space. But if you're interested in that, please show up around 8 p.m. at the Black Lodge for Vancouver Vegan Drinks. Monday, February 8th, we have Stop UBC Animal Research is hosting a creative action to kick off the Year of the Monkey to raise awareness about animal experimentation. And activists will be meeting outside the Vancouver Art Gallery, and from there they will go on to visit various different businesses that support the cause against animal experimentation, and basically, you know, create social media and take photos. And the following weekend, on February 13th, we have two events. There's National Anti-Fur Day at 10 a.m. to noon at the Vancouver Art Gallery, followed by World Love for Dolphin Day at the Vancouver Aquarium from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. And yeah, those will be some exciting advocacy events. Please go check them out.
Tell us more about the day on Saturday, the International Fur Day, right? That's different than Fur Free Friday, is that
different.
Right?
So National Anti-Fur Day has been going on in Canada for, I think, over two decades now. And basically every year around Valentine's Day, activists go out and sort of, you know, take advantage of that message about love and compassion and use it to raise awareness for animals who are being killed for vanity, for, you know, being killed for their fur. So this year we'll be doing some sort of creative street theater style action, and that's an event I'm helping to organize, so please come help out.
And then after that, there will still be time to attend the Dolphin Day protest,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we actually coordinated the two events and left a 1 hour gap between, you know, noon to 1 p.m. so people have time to get to the Vancouver Aquarium and to help out with World Love for Dolphin Day.
I've been to that World Love for Dolphin Day protest before a couple of times, and we used to have it at the Japanese consulate downtown, but now I understand it's for relevancy issues. It's going to be held at the aquarium this year, which hopefully will get a lot more people noticing it.
For sure.
And then one last thing that I wanted to say about the vegan drinks is that, you know, we used to have vegan drinks events in Vancouver a long time ago. I'm part of a group, Vancouver Meatless Meetup, used to organize them. And I don't know why they stopped, because they were really popular events. And this event that's happening just came up out of a discussion on the Vancouver Vegans Facebook group. Yeah. So yay to the person who just thought, like, oh, do you want an event like this, or should we have one like this? Let's make it happen. And then he just like posted it right away. And that's great to know. You said there's a lot of people already signed up and interested. I think it's just good for community building.
I think so.
Absolutely.
And some people like to drink. So yay. And there's the Black Lodge, that's an all vegetarian bar, right? Is that correct?
They have
that,
some really delicious vegan food there.
Yeah,
as well.
That's a great venue. And as you said, like, there's so many people going that they might have to change the venue. But that's an obviously ideal venue that we didn't have years ago when we were doing these events. That was an issue before, was to try to find a bar that could also offer vegan appetizers we would have too.
And just to clarify, you do not have to consume alcohol to show up at a vegan drinks event. There are plenty of non-alcoholic beverages available.
Yeah, that's a good clarification.
Just
I wouldn't really hear that.
Socialize.
It's just a social event. Yeah, that's great to know.
Well, thanks so much for the events, Darren.
Yeah, no problem.
You are listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, and this is Animal Voices. It's 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. ¶¶
Our first interview today is with both Tommy Knowles and Emily Pickett, co-founders of the Wildlife Defense League, which is a local nonprofit organization whose mission it is to defend wildlife in British Columbia from exploitation while abiding by international conservation laws and laws set out by First Nations. In January 2015, the government of BC announced it would be culling wolves from helicopters in an effort to save endangered caribou herds from extinction, and it went forth with this cull for 2 months last year. Now the hunt is back for 2016, while wildlife conservationists call this action unscientific, inhumane, and expensive. The Wildlife Defense League is currently actively working in a campaign against the kill, as well as trophy hunting in general. Tommy and Emily are here on the show today to tell us about their work in these areas and to give us an update on the wolf kill as it stands for 2016. Hello, Tommy and Emily, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to give us some updates where you are currently in the field in the South Selkirk region of BC. Last year, we reported on the show about the BC government's then new initiative to instigate this wolf cull to control the wolf populations. Can you tell us what were the results of last year's cull as you saw them? And now in January 2016, what is currently happening with this issue?
Yeah, so last year, 73 wolves were killed in the South Peace region and 11 in the South Selkirk. And this year, the intention is to kill upwards of 200 wolves, as conditions made it quite tough for them to achieve their goal last year. So they're targeting many more wolves for this year's cull.
So you are on site now in an area where the wolves are inhabiting. Tommy, can you tell us about the work that you're doing there?
Yeah, our crew are attempting to monitor, document, and expose the wolf call and the root causes for caribou decline. We're also tracking wolves in the South Selkirk where the call is taking place. We've connected with local residents in the area who oppose the call and have managed to gain a great deal of insight and valuable information. And, you know, from the majority of people that we speak with, they adamantly oppose the call. We've witnessed firsthand the continued destruction and fragmentation of caribou habitat in the area, especially active logging and recreational activity, including snowmobiling.
So let's get to that. The whole reason for this cull is supposedly to conserve the caribou populations, but from what I've learned when we featured this issue last year is that the wolves aren't even the problem for the caribou decline. So can you maybe talk about what you see, like why is the BC government doing this? What is their motivation to continue the cull this year in the name of species conservation?
Yeah, so the caribou population has been dwindling for decades now, and that is directly as a result of industrial expansion, including logging, mining, oil and gas, and also the building of roads and seismic lines. But the government continues to slaughter wolves to sort of give the appearance that they're doing something about caribou recovery, when in reality their only intention is just to continue to allow industry to go unchecked in caribou habitat. So it's really this kind of illusion of taking action. But really, there's some consistent criticisms about the wolf call, you know, it being unscientific, inhumane, expensive. I mean, just on the ethical level, shooting wolves from helicopters has major ethical implications. They're targeting entire wolf packs, including pups, and they'll be mercilessly gunned down at the hands of snipers. And we're talking about highly intelligent, social, family-oriented animals that are going to be torn apart, all because really it allows the government to give that illusion of action. The culling of wolves, a lot of scientists have come out and said that it's based on unsound science. Really, there's a prime example, case in point of this, is the Alberta wolf cull, which similarly aimed to help recover caribou in Alberta. But over 1,000 wolves have been killed in the last decade there, and the Little Smoky herd, caribou herd, has not recovered either. So case in point that it's truly experimental and has proven not to work. And not to mention, you know, it's a terrible misuse of taxpayer funds. The price tag for the 2015 cull in the South Selkirk, which saw 10 wolves gunned down, was $90,000 for 10 wolves. So the 5-year cull is also likely to cost at least a few million dollars. So complete misuse of taxpayer funds.
From what I understand as well is that attempts to reduce wolf populations are often futile. It doesn't even work. What are your thoughts on that?
When you cull wolves or you trap wolves, you tend to splinter packs. And it's again, futile. It does not work. You're creating more wolves by, again, splintering packs. So that's another big issue with the cull in itself, is that it's actually not addressing the root cause of caribou decline, and in essence, creating more wolves.
And so what do you see as the solution to conserving the caribou?
We see as the solution to conserving caribou, protecting significant habitat, including the protection of old growth forests, as well as enforceable restrictions to recreational activities like snowmobiling, heli skiing, and limitations on industrial development. Caribou habitat has been decimated, and we really need to set aside as much as possible so these animals can continue to flourish and continue to be part of the province.
So the BC government now has some proposals on board to dramatically escalate the wolf hunt, and one of these include removing all limits on the wolf hunt / cull in the Peace region and the majority of the Thompson-Nicoll Management Unit. What are your thoughts on this proposal if it comes into play?
Well, if these proposals are approved, it will mean hundreds, even thousands of wolves will die because of a small special interest group, mainly ranchers and hunters, who spread misinformation about the species. We really need to have a much more critical understanding of the wolf and the importance it plays in balancing ecosystems. Wolves are not to blame when it comes to caribou decline or livestock predation. Humans are, and we cannot continue to demonize and scapegoat wolves for our own faults.
So, Tommy, the work that you're doing there, I understand you're monitoring, you're tracking wolves, and your aim is to gather this information to expose what's happening to the public. How do you intend to do this?
Well, a big part of the campaign has been tracking wolves and following them into their home ranges. We hope that by doing that, we'll be able to come across the cull, but we'll also be able to show people, where these wolves live, the habitat that's been decimated by the logging industry, and hopefully gain people's public support and sentiment towards these amazing creatures.
Okay, well, I'd like to move on a bit now to speak about a related issue that the Wildlife Defense League also works on, and that is the issue of trophy hunting for leisure activities. So we do have some time to chat about this. So I'm wondering, we just haven't really covered trophy hunting a lot on the show before. So if you could give our listeners a primer on what trophy hunting is as it exists in Canada, and what are the issues that British Columbians and Canadians should know about when it comes to the trophy hunt here?
Yeah, so trophy hunting is the killing of animals for sport. And the primary goal behind that is to collect a trophy of sorts. So whether that's, getting the largest animal or a head or paws or antlers to put on your wall, it's all about collecting a trophy at the end of the day. It serves no purpose, and it certainly has no place in our society. It's completely unethical, it's unsustainable, and it is an exploitive industry as well.
And what are the issues at hand here in BC as trophy hunting is affected in our province?
Trophy hunting is a very immediate threat to grizzly bears in the province, especially considering the fact that the government has completely overestimated bear numbers in the province by using poor wildlife models to estimate populations. They're allowing the continued hunt to go on despite the fact that 95% of British Columbians are against the hunt. Other animals in the province are also trophy hunted: cougars, lynx, wolves, bobcats, and even bighorn sheep. There are places in the province where it costs you $50,000 just to hunt a sheep. So
I'm wondering, why is this all fueled if most British Columbians actually don't want the trophy hunt to occur? I'm thinking, again, there's some political measures here at hand. What's keeping this industry alive here in BC?
Well, the Liberal government is keeping that industry alive, and that's because they work very closely with the Guide Outfitters Association of British Columbia and the BC Wildlife Federation, and they are the lobby groups for the trophy hunt. They work very closely with the government to ensure that their right to trophy hunt is allowed, and they have quite a large membership, so it buys the Liberal government votes. So again, yeah, this is completely a political issue. It has nothing to do with the majority of British Columbians, as we said, 95% who are against the hunt. It's simply political.
Yeah, I would think that the reason that 95% of British Columbians are against the hunt, and it's such an easy
decision for our people in our province to make that they would not be behind this is just because it seems disgusting, like to have to just to take these animals' lives for no reason. I mean, is that your baseline stance on this issue, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the ethical issues behind trophy hunting resonate with us. It's also completely unsustainable because they're taking young, healthy animals out of the gene pool. And again, it really has no place in today's society. These animals aren't being hunted for food; they're being hunted for a wall mount, or just to get stuffed and for bragging rights. So. So that's one of the reasons that we're really trying to stop it.
So, Emily, you were actually active in a nationwide protest a couple of weeks ago in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, which we had mentioned on the show. But this was against the African trophy hunt that it had made its way to advertise here in Canada. I wonder if you can tell us about this, please, and what your experiences were at the protest that you participated at.
Yes, so Saskatoon is my hometown, born and raised there, and trophy hunting is obviously a practice and industry that I really oppose. And so when the two worlds collided, I had to be involved. So African Hunting Events is the organizer of that traveling trophy hunting expo. And so they had made a stop or had planned a stop in Saskatoon, intending to connect with Canadian hunters and connect them with trophy guide outfitters in Africa. So friends of mine in Saskatoon and I helped circulate a petition calling on the Saskatoon Inn to cancel the booking of the expo. And, it got a few thousand signatures and the Inn responded favorably and ended up canceling. So we were really pleased to see that. Soon after, though, and we weren't surprised that this would happen, but soon after the expo rebooked at the Travelodge Hotel in Saskatoon. So sure enough, another petition was created, and that one really ballooned. We had over 11,000 signatures on that petition from Saskatoon and all around the world. And unfortunately, the Travelodge wouldn't budge. They sort of took the stance that this, trophy hunting is legal, and they're not in a position to sort of discuss, the legality of something. If it's legal, it's legal. That's all that mattered to them. So the weekend the expo took place, about 20, 25 of us, bear the cold weather outside and protested the event. And we were really pleased with the outcome. The protest was covered in local and national news. And we actually learned afterward as well that there had obviously been some internal problems and that some Travelodge staff actually refused to work the event. Rooms didn't book up quite as they had expected. And apparently guests also walked out of the hotel restaurant when they learned about the hotel hosting the expo. So.
Wow, your efforts really did make a difference, and that must be great to know. So finally, Emily and Tommy, what can British Columbians and Canadians do to stop both the wolf call and trophy hunting programs in our country and to support the work that you're doing to achieve these goals?
We're encouraging the public to contact their MLAs and MPs to find out where they stand on the issue and ask them to oppose wolf calling and trophy hunting. In BC, the provincial elections are coming up, and we definitely need to make these an election issue. It's also important to pressure third parties that are connected to these unethical policies and industries. We've launched a campaign calling on bighorn helicopters contracted out to gun down wolves in the South Selkirk to drop their contract. We really need to hold those who participated and participate in this type of work accountable for their actions. You can support our work by visiting our website at wildlifedefenseleague.org, where we'll share actions and ways you can contribute. We also encourage people to support Coastal First Nations ban on trophy hunting in the Great Bear Rainforest and other groups working diligently to stop these kinds of hunts from happening.
Well, thank you, Tommy and Emily, for coming on the show today from the South Selkirk region of BC to give us an update on the wolf kill currently happening in British Columbia and to speak about trophy hunting. To find out more about the work of the Wildlife Defense League, please visit wildlifedefenseleague.org. You can also find a link on our website, animalvoices.org. Thanks for the work you're doing and have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
You know, we just heard at the end of that interview the importance of people taking action wherever they can in all sorts of ways. You know, we have so much power as individuals, whether it's the choices the things that we consume or the people we support to elect a government or the companies that are involved in holding them accountable. And that totally relates to this first story that I'm going to present, which is really about the power of the vegan voice. A restaurant in London, a gourmet burger kitchen, had put out some very offensive ads. You know, things like showing a young cow saying they eat grass so you don't have to, or ads that showed their burger saying, you remember the time you gave up being vegetarian, resistance is futile, those kinds of things. And there was such a powerful campaign of people who wrote in and said that they were really upset with this kind of advertising. And even there were trending on Twitter it was gourmet murder kitchen instead of burger kitchen. Wow. And the company then pulled the ads.
Good.
So it's just a testament to the power of the voice and the power of collectively coming together and saying, this isn't right. This is offensive and this is insulting. And this
what was their marketing team thinking is what I wonder.
I don't know.
Were they fired?
I hope so. I mean, it doesn't reflect at all the whole fact that, you know, veganism as a movement in the world is growing worldwide.
And they were called out for bullying a minority group, that is vegans and vegetarians.
Yeah.
So good for whoever called them out on that. Because, yeah, if you want to look at it that way, that's what it was. That's what they were doing. It's
absolutely
not cool.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, it just speaks to the power of individuals to change things. You know, we really do have the power when there's something that we don't see or something that's really offensive to us that we can make a difference. And this is a great example of that.
For sure.
So here's a story that's good news, but also has some other aspects to it. Ben & Jerry's, which is a really huge company and very well known for their ice cream, is launching a vegan line. So what are your thoughts on this, Allison and Darren? Tell us.
Well, I know that people have been asking them to do so. I think it's four different flavors that have come out, and they've announced it this week, and the flavors honestly look really good. And they're making their ice creams out of almond milk, right?
That's right.
Isn't that a good thing that an animal exploiting company, they hugely exploit cows.
Yes,
and
they do.
If you imagine the millions and millions of liters of ice cream that they must make every year. So vegan ice cream has been becoming popular. And what I see this as is not so much as people have been asking them for it, because that's what their advertising campaign was. You asked, we listened. That's good. I do like the fact that companies that make animal products are listening to vegan consumers, because
yes,
that's what we want them to do, right?
Yes, absolutely, to recognize
right.
that we have power as consumers in the marketplace.
Right. And then on the other side of the coin, you might think too, is there's so many ethical vegan ice cream companies already. Why don't we just support them instead of these companies like Ben & Jerry's? There's been other companies as well. I was telling Darren before the show, and he doesn't remember this, and probably no one else does either, that Schneider's used to make vegan meatballs.
Oh, really?
Like,
I don't remember.
Darren said he's not familiar with that company. I said, they're a meat company.
Oh,
that's
they
why.
Make hot dogs.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Oh,
you
God.
Never grew up with
nope.
Schneider's. Oh, you're lucky. Like, it's the worst processed stuff ever.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This was maybe about a decade ago, is they met the competition by starting to provide, they had meatballs. I don't remember if they had anything else, but the thing about them is that I could never find them, because apparently they mandated that they be kept in the meat section of the grocery store with their other meat products. So
oh,
no
God.
Vegans can ever find them. And anyways, I don't think they lasted that long. I don't know. Like, I never really heard about them.
Just kind of faded away.
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't very lucrative. I mean, there's other companies, too, that make most of their money exploiting animals. Mm-hmm. But then another example is Hellman's Mayo,
mm-hmm.
right? They were so angry at Just Mayo last year that they sued them for claiming that their products were mayonnaise, when in fact they said mm-hmm. it's not, because it doesn't have eggs in it like ours do. Like, ours are, you know, we create the real cruel mayo, which
yeah.
deserves the title of mayo. Yours is not. So now, guess what? They're creating a vegan mayo.
Yep.
And they're not calling it mayo either, because they have said themselves it's called some kind of plant-based base spread or something.
You know, I think the positive thing is it just represents the fact that a growing market of consumers is demanding products, more products, and they're recognizing the market share.
I think that's the bottom line, because eventually the meat-based products are going to be pushed out of the system.
Let's hope so.
I think, because we can only eat so much, right?
And that's the only way to do it. It's not to legislate it. It's for it to come from demand and from the bottom line, where business understand those things.
And I think just really quickly, it would be great if that of this sort of consumer-based energy and power can go towards also advocating more for animals instead of just more consumer choices. And I think that's actually one of the biggest critiques and concerns, is when people are seeing animal advocacy organizations celebrating Ben and Jerry's coming out with a vegan product as sort of a victory that's worth celebrating in terms of animal rights. And, you know, in the short term, no, like you're still supporting a business that or corporation that is highly, you know, just exploiting animals, and it's not really doing anything for animal liberation and animal rights.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, thanks for sharing that news with us today, Farah.
You're welcome.
Our feature interview today is with Adam Wilson, who is the Director of Investigations of the animal advocacy nonprofit organization called Last Chance for Animals. Last fall and summer, LCA conducted a 5-month undercover investigation into Marineland Canada with a primary focus on the park's beluga whale population and the conditions under which they are being held. Tying into a new bill that has just been presented to the Senate to end the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada, the findings of this investigation have just been released, and Adam is here today to tell us about it.
Hello, Adam, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to talk to us about your discoveries at Marineland Canada, which is an animal entertainment facility in Niagara Falls, Ontario. To start, just because this is pretty interesting background to know, I wonder if you could tell our listeners about the history of Marineland and how it came to start in 1961 by a Mr. John Holler.
Right. Well, Marineland started as a roadside attraction. John Holler, the owner, had a background in the circus industry and purchased some sea lions just to put on display and charged a quarter for admission. The park kind of grew from that, and by the 70s had gained an aqua theater, which was a 2,000 seat theater for displaying Candu, which was a orca whale. So now Marineland is actually Canada's largest amusement park and also confines more beluga whales than any other park in the world. This kind of shows that Marineland's primary mission was as an entertainment facility, not as any kind of educational facility for whales.
Well, your undercover investigation of Marineland took place last fall and summer. Can you tell us about the park's beluga whales? How many are being kept there, and what kinds of living conditions are they being kept in general?
Yes, so Last Chance for Animals conducted a 5-month investigation of Marineland Canada, and we focused on the park's beluga whales. There are 46 beluga whales confined to 3 main concrete pools with no breeding program in place to regulate the births. During the investigation, there were 5 baby beluga whales that were born and 1 that died. So the population is growing, the pools themselves are, some are only 16 feet deep. They're devoid of any kind of semblance of the natural environment that a beluga would be in. They have brightly painted surfaces which reflect the sunlight, and the whales themselves are unable to escape the scrutiny of the public. They're always on display. This kind of sterile environment promotes unnatural behaviors such as this constant circling and begging for food. The water in the pools themselves may also be filled with toxic levels of bleach. During the investigation, visitors and staff would report the smell of chlorine and burning eyes when they were close to the water. So it's a very unnatural environment.
You know, I'm really surprised to learn that there's 46 beluga whales at this one facility. That's not something that is common, as far as I know, as far as marine mammal entertainment facilities go around the world. Why does Marineland have a need or use, if you want to put it that way, for 46 belugas?
Well, they certainly don't have a need for keeping that many whales captive, or any whales for that matter. But the males and females are kept together in the pools, so the breeding goes on without any sort of planning. And it's just nature just takes its course, and the population will grow and fluctuate just, you know, based on that. Marineland employees admitted that they don't really know how many females will be pregnant each year. They just wait until there are signs of pregnancy. And this kind of constant breeding in a very finite space just creates so many other problems, such as the overcrowding in the pools, which leads to the aggression against each other and the very elevated stress levels that reduces the quality of life for the whales.
Well, your investigation uncovered what you are calling disturbing inadequacies in the care of the whales. Can you tell us about these, please?
Yes, and the investigation was not just to make a sad video about beluga whales. There are requirements for the care of all animals that are on display in Ontario and where the park is located. And so, you know, we discovered the, you know, great inadequacies in the veterinary care for the beluga whales. There was no on-staff veterinarian who was monitoring the whales on a daily basis, which left an undiagnosed condition that caused the female whales to be constantly rubbing themselves on the concrete floors of the pools to such a degree that there would be blood in the water. And this condition was reported over the course of many months to the park management, but was never diagnosed and never treated properly. There was also a young whale, Gia, who just mistakenly was put into a isolation pool and separated from her mother. And over the course of the 5-month investigation, her health deteriorated to such an extent that she became incredibly emaciated. She was put in a very shallow isolation pool for another 3 months, again, separated from the pod and from her mother, and just continued to deteriorate. In the video, you can see that her ribs are visible, that, you know, when our experts looked at the footage, they were amazed and said that medical intervention was necessary to ensure the health of this calf. There were many problems with the eyes of the beluga whales: redness, irritation, premature cataracts that a lot of the whales are suffering that are all untreated, hypersalivation, regurgitation of the food that's being fed to them, all of these issues untreated, not being looked at by a marine mammal expert. So these are, you know, serious violations of the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, which mandates just very, very basic standards of care for animals that are on display.
From what I understand, these types of injuries are quite common to be found in marine mammals when they are kept in these unnatural and inadequate housing conditions, as at a marine mammal park. At what cost do you think should these animals be harmed like this in order to satisfy what seems to be an overall dwindling desire for human beings' entertainment in this day and age of increasing awareness?
Well, Last Chance for Animals doesn't support the keeping of any whales in captivity. Marine parks like this offer no educational value to the public. The behaviors of the whales and dolphins in captivity are just so different from animals in the wild. The public really just sees whales that are trained to beg for food. Marineland makes a significant portion of its summer profits from selling tickets so that people can feed the whales. So they're the marine land is training the whales to bob and wave their flippers and entertain crowds of people. This is so far removed from the social environment that whales live in the wild. You know, we know that whales in captivity have a shortened lifespan. The expert who reviewed our video, you know, said that this public exposure puts the whales at risk of infection, and it, you know, it leads to their high mortality rates. So there's no public value to these parks, and I think that the awareness that is being created from investigations like this and other documentaries on captive marine mammals are really kind of shifting people's perception of what value these parks have. And you know, there was a really great documentary on beluga whales that debuted on The Nature of Things last week at the same time we were releasing the investigation. And people could learn more from watching that documentary than they ever could from going to Marineland.
Well, as you mentioned, you filed a complaint to the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals for violation of the OSPCA Act and its prescribed standards of care. I wonder if you could touch on that a little bit more and tell us what you hope to be the outcome of this complaint.
So, yes, so there are extensive regulations on animals put on display and in terms of their medical care and their housing and treatment. And so the investigation uncovered, you know, all of these violations of the act. And so we submitted a detailed complaint to the OSPCA in hopes that they will enforce all of the violations that we found, such as the housing the animals in enclosures that promote unsafe interactions with the public, that lead to these various medical conditions, that the whales are kept in you know, a possibly toxic environment with industrial strength bleach being added to the water. So, you know, the enforcement of the act is our short-term goal. The enforcement will not solve the problem of marine land, but it will make them accountable. I don't think they've ever been under scrutiny in the way that the evidence from this investigation will allow the OSPCA to really inspect them. So enforcement of all of the violations that we found, again, is the short-term goal. The long-term goal is an actual end to whales and dolphins in captivity in Canada.
Well, I learned recently that there's actually been some new legislation to protect marine mammals in Ontario. It came out last year, but it's supposed to go into effect this year. And this is coming after a three-year investigation by the Toronto Star newspaper. Do you think these changes are going to help?
Well, in Ontario, it will have you know, some effect. Right now, as the act is, it will ban the breeding of orcas. So it's selective in its application. It will, you know, keep marine land from purchasing or breeding the lone orca that they have, or purchasing another orca. So that's good in one sense. It leaves the belugas and the porpoises and dolphins unprotected. It does provide more kind of, in some ways, more extensive regulations on the housing and care of the marine mammals, but it falls short in terms of its solutions to the problem. Like I'm saying, the, you know, over-regulation and or creating more regulations in terms of managing belugas in captivity won't solve the problems that are brought on simply by keeping them captive. And that's the core issue, is that belugas and all other whales cannot thrive in captivity. It, in its essence, creates all these problems. So the real solution is a ban on their being held in captivity.
Well, that may be coming up. I want to talk about Bill S-203, which has recently been introduced to our Canadian Parliament by Senator Wilfrid Moore, and it just had its second reading in the Senate this week. Can you tell us what the wording of this bill entails and how it could make a difference for the cetaceans in captivity in Canada?
Yes, well, Bill S-203 is a more comprehensive solution to ending the problem of Canadian whales in captivity. The bill would ban any cetaceans in captivity, so that would be orcas, belugas, porpoises, dolphins. It would ban their breeding, their acquisition in the wild, and importing or exporting them from Canada. So Last Chance for Animals supports the passage of this bill because it's not selective in its application, and it would cover whales not only in Ontario, but all throughout Canada. Of course, the only other facility in Canada right now that houses cetaceans is in Vancouver, at the Vancouver Aquarium. So it would cover both facilities and really address the problem that captivity is the issue. And acquiring whales from the wild, breeding more whales in captivity, that in and of itself is the problem that Canada needs to solve.
Do you know, is this the first time that a bill like this has ever been introduced in Canada?
I believe so, yes. We met with Senator Moore last week to discuss the bill and offer our support. And, you know, his staff is really looking at this as a comprehensive solution. And I feel that they did an incredible amount of research to make the bill robust and address the main issues that captive whales are facing. So we're in support of this bill, and I think Canadians should really urge their MPs to get behind it as well, because it will be the solution to ending whales in captivity for Canada.
Yeah, I had the chance to actually read some of the highlights of the reading, the second reading of the bill this week. And one thing that Senator Moore had said, which I totally stand behind, is he says, "I think we can all agree that the status quo is not something Canadians can or should be proud of." It just seems like times are changing, perhaps, and the time has come. Now, on the other side, Marineland has made some interesting comments about this bill, and I wonder if you could comment on what they've said. So a couple things that they've said is that the bill is a bi-coastal job creation and tourism bill at the expense of Ontario, and it will rob the average people of Ontario from a fair opportunity to see our marine mammals. What do you think of those comments?
Right. Well, you know, first off, Marineland is an amusement park, so the rides and the other facilities at Marineland wouldn't have to close or be altered in any way. Marineland is also planning a multi-million dollar expansion right now for another aquarium to house more marine animals. They could use that money to expand the other facets of the amusement park and be just as successful or more so. So that's, you know, they're kind of framing it in the sense that they will be out of business and everyone will be out of business. And that's just not the case. Marineland employs a small staff during the summer and lays them off during the winter. They're not providing secure jobs for many people at all. The real issue is that we don't have the right to have whales being placed at our doorstep just for convenience. These are wild animals that need to be kept in the wild. If we had that view about every animal, we'd be scouring the four corners of the world and, you know, keeping exotic animals all over the place. And that's not a right of the Canadian public. We have the right to protect the animals in the wild, and that's what we should be focusing on.
Yeah, and as I said, I think times are changing. Right now, at this time, we have the introduction of this new bill to Parliament. We have your breaking investigation of Marineland and the beluga whales. We have films like Blackfish and Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered that are being seen by the public. So what is your prediction as to the course of action that may follow over the next few years with regards to keeping whales and dolphins in captivity in Canada? Do you think it's going to be a thing of the past very shortly? And what can our listeners do to help?
Well, I think this is the watershed moment. And in speaking with Senator Moore, their timeline on passing this bill is by the summer. They want this bill signed into law very soon and are devoting significant efforts to that. So We're urging Canadians to go to lcanimal.org and sign our petition in support of S203. And I think also really, you know, people should call their MP and voice support for this bill. Ask them to vote in favor. Calling your MP directly is one of the most powerful things that you can do to shape, you know, how laws are brought about. And that's really important that people do that. So if Canadians really want to end this practice of keeping whales in captivity, they have the opportunity to do this by the summer and get this bill signed into law.
Well, thank you, Adam, for all your good work on this issue and for coming on the show today to speak about your recent investigation of Marineland Canada. You can find out more about Last Chance for Animals' work at lcanimal.org, and your petition is there as well. You can also find a link to the petition on our website, animalvoices.org. Thanks, Adam, and have a good day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, February 12th. It's going to be the annual Valentine's Day show. And
yay!
Allison, tell us about it.
I'm excited for it. Okay, so the theme is going to be everything to do with vegan dating.
Oh, great.
There you go. We're going to have a roundtable discussion of various vegans, and they'll be telling their dating experiences and answering questions. I'm going to call out to the vegan community and get them to share stories as well. And we'll be having a special interview with a local vegan activist named Jenny, who will share how she uses dating as an actual form of animal activism to reach out to her dates. So,
Love that.
It's going to be fun. Also, want to do a shout out to our biggest supporter, Carl Loskin, and who's also a former Animal Voices host. It's his birthday this weekend, so happy birthday, Carl.
So here at Animal Voices, we would love to connect with you online. You can check us out at animalvoices.org, and from that website, you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can read the show blog with detailed links and also subscribe via iTunes. And stay in touch. Stay in touch with us on Facebook. It's Animal Voices Vancouver. You can join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We are an all-volunteer-run radio station, and we need help, both the station and specifically Animal Voices. So if you're interested in producing or hosting shows or doing interviews, if you have good organizational skills and are familiar with the issues of animal advocacy and veganism, send us an email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We could really use your help, and a training will be provided. So please think about getting involved and helping promote and support the show. You can also send suggestions and comments about the show on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're going to close the show now with a whale song, which is Manitou by Darkleg. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thanks so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.